on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacy Lynn. The search for the missing continues in Texas after last week's flash floods. CBS's Karen Hawa is in Kerrville.
Amid the devastation, there are also stories of hope and heroism.
There was one little girl, I don't remember her name, but she was asking me if she could bring her stuffed animal, if there was space in the helicopter, and the obvious answer was yes.
U.S. Coast Guard rescue swimmer Scott Ruskin saved 165 people, working with his crew to airlift girls out of Camp Mystic. This happened to be the first mission of his career.
At least 170 are still missing. 122 are confirmed dead, including many young girls from a summer camp. Other camps around the state are still open. Sarah Kraft is with Camp Skylark in Dallas.
We really wanted to keep the sadness as much as we could at bay for the majority of our kids, but then give space for those that needed extra space to process.
The latest to get hit with tariffs by President Trump, the EU and Mexico, causing tensions with two of America's biggest trade partners. CBS's Adrian Bard with how Mexico is taking the news.
The Mexican government called the tariffs an unfair deal, according to a joint statement issued by its foreign and economic ministries today. A delegation of Mexican officials was in the U.S. Capitol on Friday and aware that President Trump was not going to give Mexico a break.
The son of Mexican drug kingpin El Chapo has pleaded guilty to drug trafficking and other charges. CBS's Dana Jacobson has details.
Ovidio Guzman Lopez admitted that he coordinated the transportation of cocaine, fentanyl, and other drugs to the U.S. He was facing a maximum life sentence for his role in his father's cartel, but he appeared in a Chicago courtroom, changed his plea, and promised to fully cooperate with the feds for a lighter sentence.
Off to London now.
Game champion.
It was a shutout at Wimbledon in the women's final today. Our Catherine Arms is there.
Iga Świątek took the Wimbledon title in two sets, both 6-love, for the first time in the championship's history. For the ninth successive year, there's a different women's winner. Świątek now has won major matches on all three surfaces with this Wimbledon triumph. This women's final took just 57 minutes.
The men hit the court tomorrow. Carlos Alcaraz will try to claim his third title against Jannik Sinner, who he beat just last month at the French Open final with a thrilling fifth set comeback. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay. Who wants to spend their weekday evening learning about the importance of foreign aid? Turns out, more than 24 people at the McMillan Memorial Library in Wisconsin Rapids earlier this week. They were there to hear Greg St. Arnold, an educator based in Milwaukee and former staffer for Senator Russ Feingold. But St. Arnold has also spent years coordinating regional education for the Jesuit Refugee Service in Eastern and Southern Africa. His topic wasn't Congress. It was on the United States legacy of humanitarianism.
There's three reasons why we should all support foreign aid. Number one is that it makes us safer as Americans.
Recently, a U.S. humanitarian program has officially sunset. USAID has been around since the 1960s, and the Jesuit Refugee Service utilized some of that funding for their aid work. USAID gives aid during conflicts and natural disasters. Think food to Sudanese farmers facing floods and to improve material conditions for people around the world. The thinking is, foreign aid helps prevent future conflicts that would affect us here at home.
Another way that it makes us safer is by stabilizing unstable situations or unstable areas.
But projects to support food security and combat infectious diseases have been gutted by the Trump administration. With most of its staff laid off, USAID formally closed at the start of the month. St. Arnold says that other countries will step in to fill the gap, but he says USAID spending is smart, strategically, and morally.
was the right thing to do for the United States to be engaged in kind of helping build and stabilize these types of places. And we've just kind of walked away from it.
For Civic Media News, I'm Melissa Kay.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Scattered showers and thunderstorms possible today. Highs near 80 degrees, becoming mostly sunny this afternoon. It'll be a little bit breezy out of the west. For tonight, mostly clear and breezy, a low around 60. Sunday, sunshine and 82. Sunny and 85 on Monday.
Currently, 78 degrees.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be back from the Northern Wisconsin State Fair and the world headquarters of Madison, taking a look at the weekend headlines and looking ahead to our next road trip with Jane Matinere. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome one and all. Oh, we're back. We're back after a week off. Hope you all had a wonderful 4th of July, Independence Day. Yeah, ours was wonderful. We went to the big town of Bonduelle for their fireworks show, and it was wonderful. The kids loved it. And I hope you and your families had a great 4th of July as well. I'm going to get to the guest because this person is wonderful. She is a senator, the esteemed senator, and my friend and yours, former host of the show as well, Senator Kristen Dasler-Alfheim. How are you?
Hello, friends. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Now, I have to ask, you know, if you watch The Crown, you know, or one of those shows, you understand, like, you are who you are, but then when you get elected, not The Crown wasn't elected, but like they become that becomes them. And even though it is temporary, that is who you are.
Yeah.
And it's something that you wear no matter what you're wearing. You know, how is that, has that changed anything, any perspective, any like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reality that, in fact, my neighbors were out the other day and, Carrie Ann had walked over to say hello, and they're like, why are you never outside? Why do we never see Chris? And her response was very true. She goes, because she don't want to talk to people.
Yeah.
Because all day long, you are at all times prepared to interact, to answer questions, some of them hard, some of them easy, but all day long. And there's a time in the day where I just need to stop. I just need to shut down, find my couch. Honest answer, take my bra off. You know? I mean, we're real people, you know, and it's a 24-hour a day operation. And so, I mean, I enjoy this. I think that I'm the right person, the right time to be in this.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't look at anything negative on there. But when I need to shut down, I need to shut down. And that's okay.
Because you still have your job as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's still.
Yeah, you know, there's magic in having, you know, ADD. And I got to tell you, I found the perfect balance right now. I mean, I enjoy my career. I've done well in business, and I love my clients, and I still get to take care of them. But there are days, especially through budget season, where my head is on a swivel.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, 2 hours in this mission, and then shoom, and then you turn the other direction, and it's 2 hours in that transition, and shoom, and you go back to the other one. And you just kind of bounce back and forth. I think for the first time in my life, when I go to bed, my brain is kind of tired and I'm ready to go to sleep, which means I'm at capacity.
yeah I know this. Last night I was up until like 11:30, 12:01. I couldn't shut it off.
It's hard.
I envy that.
There might be a little kicker in there to help me, but let's be honest. But
Tito?
It's true. There's so much. And, you know, my clients enjoy that I'm involved. They know I'm a good person to do it. Mm. And, you know, in Madison, they respect the fact that I still have a business run. And so it's all a matter of time blocking and management.
Yeah.
And I have a calendar that has the equivalent of 6 calendars combined into it. And so everything is blocked weeks in advance as to where I need to be and what I need to be doing. And my business life calendar is blended in so that we make sure that everything gets the time that it needs to do properly. And a little personal time too.
I was going to say, how does family? I mean, you gotta make time for
the calendar exists for all. So that's again, good. my personal, my business, and my political calendar are all melded into one, so that it can be respectful of every piece that needs to be in there. And you know, family time is in there as well.
That's good for you. Now you said little nugget in there, budget season. Deep breath. How was that? I've only heard stories.
Unbelievable. Yeah? I mean, I think my favorite word is unbelievable because it doesn't really imply good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, this is my first one, so it's a learning opportunity. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that coming in this one, again, maps matter. And this is the first half of the map change. And so that enters a new dynamic. So not only
do you... Talk about that.
Well, you know, half of the Senate came through elections last time. So the Senate Democrats increased their total by 4. And all 4 that came in are in competitive districts, extremely competitive districts. So you have a strong, strong Democratic caucus in Madison. You now have 4 new voices coming in, along with one that was already there, which is Brad Paff. And so you have a little bit more purple involved with the blue, because we're all representing our constituency the best that we can in the way that we ran. And that in itself is a shift for the Democratic caucus. And I will tell you, I will be a fan of Diane Hesselbein for a very, very long time.
How come?
Because managing change is difficult. Managing personalities is difficult as it is. And when you have a group that has been together, locked in a corner because of the gerrymandering, that have had zero control, then we get a little bit of control back and now you have new voices. To manage through the change of a caucus in its overall makeup, in the first opportunity that the Democrats have to have any say whatsoever in a budget in, I mean, a long, long time.
Yeah.
That takes skill. It takes courage.
This and is what, 2008?
Yeah. And she did it masterfully. I mean, truly.
Diane is a leader of the Senate.
Diane is
the
leader.
Caucus.
And I say leader with a capital L.
Okay. So, and how, I mean, don't divulge too much, but I do want to, what happened behind closed doors?
Well, I'm not even sure I know the rules. I know during the budget session, we're in a caucus, we don't get to talk about what's going on because you don't want to give away the negotiations. Yeah. But I will say that you know, we didn't even know what the governor had negotiated to with the Republicans until about 10 days before the budget was passed. None of it was disclosed. There were no negotiations with the Democrats and the Republicans until 10 days before. It was the governor working with them. And honestly,
governor with Republicans first?
Only with Republicans until, again, the final 10 days.
And for people that are listening who, you know, are, how could he not? That's because maps matter.
Maps matter.
That forces him to do that.
And again, I'm very respectful of Zach Madden and the governor. I think where they got the budget to in those negotiations was far better than we thought. It was far better than we thought he would get. But I think the reality, and this is my opinion, and I've shared this with the governor's team, I think that the governor could have utilized a different strategy. I think that he used the same strategy on this budget as he has for the 2 prior budgets.
Which was what?
Which was the Democrats have no leverage, so it's all up to him. And he did his best to play defense against the Republican budget. And that's what he did. Now, this budget, this cycle, with, again, half of our new maps in, there was leverage. Not a lot, but there was leverage in the Senate. And again, I think it's fair to say that a different strategy could have been utilized. If the leverage was known, then why not apply the leverage from the beginning as opposed to the end? And again, he's done a great job. He gets to do whatever he wants to do. But my opinion, and again, I've shared this, it's not a secret with his team. My opinion is I would have played that strategy differently.
So I sit down with the Democrats first and then go to the Republicans and say, listen, if you don't do this,
well, everybody, you know, kind of knew that the Senate Republicans were going to have a hard time. They were going to need a vote or two. And I think the assumption was that they would just come to a deal and one or two Democrats would get picked off. And to the credit of Mark Spreitzer, Senator Spreitzer, and Senator Hesselbein, they had our caucus pull together. And my answer was, Diane has my proxy. And all of us said that. In essence, the answer was, we have 15 no's until we're at the table to work and negotiate this deal, we are 15 no's. You are not going to pick off one of us that's purple or two of us that are purple. It's not going to work that way. And that, again, takes leadership.
Yeah.
It takes leadership. So we banded together as a caucus to say, no, we are going to expect more. And Diane went to the table and literally, again, first, give her credit, first Democrat there in a long time. Second, first woman there. And she is going head-to-head with Robin Voss. And you know he's had the run of the world for a very long time.
Yes.
And she not only held her own, she got far more, far more than he ever wanted to give up.
What are the things that she got that he didn't want to give up?
Everything. Well. So, I mean, I'll take it back about it. You know, in my opinion, there were only four options for this budget.
Yep.
One was to accept the Republican budget as it was. I mean, Tony's budget goes in and then it means nothing because they strip everything out back to base. So the worst option, in my opinion, was to go back to base, which would have been no budget whatsoever. That is what a few of the Senate Republicans were hoping for, because going back to base is theoretically, and it actually is, a cut to what spending had been.
What does that mean, going back to base?
Going back to base means you go back to the base budget of the following, of the prior budget. So funding at education, funding special education, there was zero child care, there's no increases for anything, and there's a tremendous amount of temporary positions that are not made permanent by the Republicans, so we would have lost a lot of that. There's a lot of programs that are stacked on a temporary basis. So all of that gets stripped off. So we not only would not have moved forward, we would have moved backwards. And there were literally Republican senators voting for that. That's what they wanted.
How would they do that?
By just not.
Why would they do that?
Again, they have the majority. So if they can't pass a budget, if we couldn't pass a budget on time, that's what would happen. It's a reversion back to the base.
To the last budget.
And then again, all of the excess temporary stuff gets pulled off. So it's worse than going. It's worse than holding status quo. It's backwards from there. That was the worst option.
Yeah.
The second worst option would have been accepting the Republican JFC budget, because the Republican JFC budget had, what, 37 and 39 for special education. You know they didn't want to do any special education.
Why not special education? Well, 37 and 39.
The 37% would be the reimbursement, some certain.
Oh, okay.
Which, again, we all know that we want some sufficient so that the schools can actually count on and bank on what's coming in. Doesn't happen.
Yep.
Okay. So they were going to give 37 and 39 on special education. They didn't want to do any child care whatsoever. We just know this to be true. The governor, the Republicans' version of things is not at all where the Democratic philosophy stands. That's the second worst option. Then you have the where, in essence, the governor had gotten to in negotiations, which was, I think, a little bit ahead of that, and the child care came into play. And childcare was a big deal. And again, I know that there's disappointment in this budget. There's no question that we on the Democratic side believe in the need to facilitate our childcare programs across the state. Childcare Counts has kept it afloat. Governor's was a hard must have it in there in the negotiations. And I think he actually did a great job. The disappointment is that it doesn't cover the full budget. Yep, I know. Because they wanted zero. They wanted none. So the governor negotiated to cover the first year the way that we knew that it would work. He did get a tremendous increase in the SHARES reimbursement rate from 50 up to 75%, which is a big deal, especially for the lower income communities. So in essence, the daycare providers can afford to take those kids in.
Yep.
But he had to give up. Again, compromise means you have to let. The Republican philosophy is that we shouldn't be throwing money at childcare. We should be making it easier to be in childcare. A compromise means you had to give them a shot. So this budget on child care says we're going to use basically extend child care counts-ish, whatever they want to call it, for a year. Meanwhile, the Gobin bills, or the Republican versions of let's fix child care our way, were put in for the first year. So in essence, the Republicans are going to have a chance to validate that that program helps or works, or they won't. And at the end of that 1 year, we're going to either have to do a budget amendment that or an amended budget that then takes care of child care, or we will have a functioning system, or perhaps a combination of the two, which is not a bad idea. But the idea that we got nothing is not true, because nothing would have been the Republicans winning, giving nothing to child care, and everything would have crashed and burned. So 50% of that, of 100%, is a pretty good number. And right. again, now there's more work to be done, and we have to work together to make that happen.
Yeah, we're talking with Senator Chris Dasper-Elfheim. I want to drill down a little bit on that, just to kind of clear things up for people, because that's a big topic here on the other end of the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hi, I'm Ashley, a certified radio digital executive. With decades of experience working with small businesses and owning my own, does digital marketing make you feel overwhelmed? Sometimes there are so many choices and packages to choose from. You could just sign up for everything and the kitchen sink. But there's a better way. Call me at 715-496-0710 and I can build the perfect package for your business.
Get those oars ready. It's time for Rafter Baseball. Your Wisconsin Rapids Rafter season is here, and there's never been a better time to get to legendary Winterfield. They have new and classic promotions going on all summer. And remember, if you can't get to the park, every hit, every pitch, every win is at 97.5 WFHR. We will have every game broadcast here as it's been for 16 years. Get to know the team with our segment, Meet Your Rafters, and listen for ticket giveaways. It's going to be a memorable summer with your Wisconsin Rapids Rafters and your 97.5 FM WFHR. Let's play ball.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. We want to hear from you there, too. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are sitting down here with Senator Chris Dasper-Elfheim. You know, it's interesting. We were talking on the other side about childcare and funding for all of that in the budget, and for a party that really wants kids to be born, darn it, they sure don't really feel like they need to be taken care of a ton after that happens.
Yeah.
So, because this is something that I feel like I'm a pretty well-read person. How does this whole thing work? Where were we and where did it go to?
So child care accounts involved a lot of direct payments to the child care providers. And the Republicans' argument has been for years that they could fix it through lessening the regulations. And I will say that some of my CCRs, the organizations that help in the child care industry, said that there is some validity to that.
Yes,
there's some. Now, again, when the Republicans came back, one of the things that I know the child care people are not happy about is the new ratios of 1-7, meaning one instructor per pupil.
Yep.
And in some cases, it had been 1-4, and the Republicans came in hard. They were a firm was not going to change at 1-7. Now, I think that every person on the planet that works in childcare knows that a 1-7 ratio is way too big. That's too many kids. I mean, just imagine trying to wrangle that. Again, Senator Hasselbein, who worked in childcare in college, was at that table saying, "You do not understand. You do not understand how difficult that is." The challenge that we ran up against is if you look to Minnesota, our very liberal, progressive neighbor, they have a 1-7 ratio.
It's hard to make that argument.
It's hard to fight against something. Now, the rest of the story, which matters, is that Minnesota doesn't use it. There's really nobody using a 1-to-7 ratio. Mm. But it is in their law. Therefore, we had a hard time trying to get off of that. So could you argue? I think there are some reasons, you know, in the rural communities, they now are allowing two teachers instead of one. Is that a big deal? Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, it is. There's a lot of stuff in there. There's some reality. There's I think about $2 million worth of grant money involved for nonprofits and I want to say Wonder Schools, which is an organization that works to increase the people, basically recruits people into the child care industry that has had some success across the country. That was part of the Govan bills, so that was agreed to. So again, if we stand on opposite sides and the Democrats feel that the only way to fix this is a mimic of the child care counts, and the Republicans stand on one side and say, no, that's not right, we're not going to give any money, we want to do it this way. This budget, and again, to the governor's credit, says, all right, we don't believe it, but we're going to give you a year to prove it. Yeah. So that was the compromise.
So what happens in a year?
What happens in the year is either the programs that the Republicans fought for are effective.
How would they know?
Well, I think that the industry should be able to tell us. I think the industry will know, are they recruiting more people? Are there more spots available? Yeah. I mean, I think the data will be fairly easy to read. Have these programs been beneficial or not? Have they been beneficial to a degree? So perhaps we can offset that. But the reality is, I think that everyone should be hoping for success.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Right?
Everybody should be hoping for success for the sake of the kids, for the sake of the providers, for the sake of the business community, for the sake of the families, for everybody. So, again, 1 year from now, after all of these programs are up and running that we've invested in that are, again, from the Republican perspective are supposed to fix it, either they're going to have helped or not. And then if not, if the problem is not solved, which is the expectation from the Democrats, then there's going to have to be a remedy, which means we're going to have to go to an amended, you know, to amend the budget, which is not uncommon.
Right.
It's not uncommon. Again, the thing we can't do, in my opinion, is throw a fit to the fact that nothing was done. That's not true. It is a Republican-controlled legislature.
Right.
With a governor and a Democratic Party that wants desperately to do the right thing.
What do you mean you didn't get a $15 an hour minimum wage and universal health care? Right. What?
I was at a group the other night and I started the conversation with, we asked for everything you would have wanted us to ask for. We asked hard for everything. Yeah. Everything that you would have wanted in that budget, the governor asked for and the Democratic caucus asked for. Everything you would have wanted, we fought hard for. And when we got hard no's, we got hard no's.
Yeah.
And in the end, we got added in. We got the special education up to 42 and 45. Yeah. Still some certain, still not enough, still not some sufficient, still not 60%. But in what budget, if the governor comes in at a 60% ratio and the Republicans want none,
right?
You know, they're currently sitting at 30. What's the compromise between 60 and 30?
Right.
45. Right. That's where we landed.
Right.
Right. And again, in a Republican controlled legislature,
that's pretty good.
Got halfway through the increase. So to say it was a minuscule increase, I think is not
fair.
It's not fair because it's a 50% increase over where it was.
Right. And over where the party that is in the majority wants it to be.
Right. It's not enough. I get that. There must be more. We should be disappointed that we are still not taking care of our schools the way we need to. We should be.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between saying we're still not there and saying, oh, we actually have moved forward in the right direction for the first time. For the first time in over a decade, we have positive movement and positive investments. And now look where we can be. I look at it as this is the last crappy budget that we have to sign. The last one.
Right.
Because we will be in charge. If we continue, if the Democrats continue working as hard and as tirelessly as they have, and God bless the volunteers out there knocking on doors and making phone calls, they got us to this point, and we are one step away from actually being in charge.
Right.
And then all of those philosophies that we want to see, now we're in charge. Where's the money coming from is the question on the Republican side. Well, maybe we can look at all those billions of dollars of subsidies that are going out behind our backs to places that don't need them. And we can reshuffle the system to make sure that we can indeed take care of these kids.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, there's so many areas that we need to improve on from the bloated prison population that we have to, right. Oh my God, there's so much. We're talking with State Senator Kristen Dassler Alfheim. This is a great discussion. We're going to talk next about kind of where things sit. Where does the Democratic Party need to go? Where do we need to be looking for, you know, and how can this budget conversation guide where our politics go in 2026? Because holy crap, midterms are coming. Ooh. Oh, you got the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker on the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
CBS News Brief. The president visited flood-ravaged Central Texas and promised support for victims. He also defended the emergency response to the disaster. Alongside Mr. Trump was Republican Congressman Pete Sessions of Texas, who says they will investigate it.
I work on a bipartisan basis with my subcommittee ranking member to make sure that we avoid the kinds of comments that the federal government is responsible and did not do a good job.
President Trump announced a 30% tax on Mexico and the European Union, which EU analyst Jacob Funk Kirkgaard calls...
It really is a slap in the face, right? We bend over backwards to try to get a deal.
A shutout at Wimbledon, Iga Swiatek beat Amanda Anisimova in the women's final.
Honestly, I didn't even dream because for me it was just like way too far, you know.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
The Brewers host the Nationals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers face the Nationals in game two of their three-game series. Brandon Woodruff gets the start. Last night, the Brewers won the opener 8-3. At his press conference after the game, manager Pat Murphy had this to say.
Good. Hey, I got another announcement, guys, before you get up. Jacob Mizorowski will pitch in the All-Star game.
Mizorowski says Murphy told him the news about 5 minutes before the start of the national anthem.
Got called in the Mercer's office and sitting in there, and he said, hey, close the door. Come on. Get in here and, yeah, basically broke it to me, and I had to sit there the whole game and not tell anyone.
Mizorowski joins Trevor McGill, representing the team at the All-Star game Tuesday night, teammate Quinn Priester.
That's awesome. No, I was fired up. I was really fired up for him. It is, it's electric to watch. I'm excited for those guys who get to see it from a dugout view like I've been able to, and he's going to represent us really well.
That's Brewers pitcher Quinn Priester with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If you thought it was hard to cancel a streaming subscription before, brace yourselves, because it's about to get even more difficult. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the Federal Trade Commission's click-to-cancel option has been struck down by a federal appeals court. The FTC has tried to make it equally as easy to cancel a subscription as it is to sign up, so expect much more frustration. The whole issue started with Amazon, which was accused of tricking customers into signing up for Prime, then making it extremely difficult to cancel. I guess we know how Bezos paid for that wedding. Here's a Hollywood beat just for me. I hope you like it too. The show Bosch is coming back by way of another spinoff. Ballard will drop on Amazon Prime like Bosch and Bosch Legacy did previously, both of which are now kaput. Maggie Q will play Renee Ballard. Titus Welliver will return as Harry Bosch, who will assist Ballard with cold cases from time to time. All 10 episodes of Ballard dropped a couple days ago and are available on Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Scattered showers and thunderstorms possible today. Highs near 80 degrees, becoming mostly sunny this afternoon. It'll be a little bit breezy out of the west. For tonight, mostly clear and breezy, a low around 60. Sunday, sunshine and 82. Sunny and 85 on Monday.
Right now, it's 80.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In a chaotic and somewhat discombobulating end to the process, Wisconsin lawmakers passed a state budget and Governor Tony Evers signed it into law at about 1:30 a.m. on July 3rd. What made this budget different from the others signed in this era of divided government is that Democratic votes were needed to pass the budget in the state Senate. Part of the reason that was made possible is because of new, fairer maps. Last November, Senate Democrats flipped four seats, shrinking the Republican majority to just an 18-15 margin. Now, candidates are already lining up to take this the rest of the way and flip the chamber. Democrat Jenna Jacobson, who currently serves in the Assembly, is now running for Senate, challenging Republican Howard Markline in the 17th District. If Democrats can flip that district and one more seat, they could control the state Senate for the first time in more than 15 years. That would be a big deal for state politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. Pat Kreitlow.
Monday, we'll put a focus on Green Bay goings-on. We'll chat with Dr. Kristen Lyerly and preview the Jane Matinere Todd Alba Tour of Wisconsin.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train.
We got a duet here on the Rational Revolution. Yes. We've got the second singer you hear there is the sweet sound of State Senator Kristen Death Ralph.
All the way to New Orleans.
Bam, bam, bam. All right, so thanks for hanging out. You know, if you like what you heard, because what the hell? I mean, who wouldn't? You can download this episode and all the episodes civicmedia.us. Download our app. You can wherever podcasts are. You can listen as many times as you want. Hit that stuff on repeat. One of the things I want to talk about is kind of where we are politically. Where does everything go? And you said something in the discussion last segment about we all want to make sure that we do the right thing, and I was like, yeah, but, and I the one thing that I always, when I was a Republican chairman, I started any discussion with people that I was talking to about why do we compromise. We all want a good thing to happen. We all want the success of the population. We all want this to succeed. We all want us to be okay. And when you said that about, well, we do want this to be successful. We're talking about this program. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're almost at a point where it's like, I don't know if they want that program to be successful, because then if it's not, it goes away.
Well, I'm not the Republicans, right?
Right.
But I would say that Republicans in general don't like the idea of throwing money at industries that they don't, or industries that don't support them.
Right.
Because you can't say that a Republican doesn't believe in subsidizing industry. They subsidize. Oh, check out WMC.
Right.
WMC, I mean, billions of dollars that are sent in subsidies to tremendously successful industry. And God bless our businesses, right? I mean,
I'm a capitalist.
We're the Fox
I'm a
Valley.
Business owner.
I mean, we need our mutual success in our community. So I'm 100%. Not saying that we should be hurting anything, but there are plenty of dollars that are going to subsidies on things that are not childcare.
Right.
So philosophically, it's hypocritical of the Republican Party to say, nope, we shouldn't have to give money to that. You give money to everything. There's money in industry. There's money in commerce all the time.
Right.
For hundreds of years, you've done that. So it's hypocritical to say they don't think that stimulating that industry is a good idea. You just don't think they deserve it. Acknowledge it.
Right.
You don't think childcare providers are worth sending any taxpayer dollars to. Be honest about it.
Right.
Be honest about it. And if you think that the industry can fix itself, and the way you want to help is by offering these resources, okay, you've now come to an agreement that you're going to be able to put your money where your mouth is. And then, fine, let's look at the data. And again, I don't think everything is right or wrong from either side. I do think that there is something to be said for looking at situations, again, in the rural area, the fact that in a family situation, you could only have one where the option could be two, mm-hmm. I think that's actually a reasonable solution. Again, first and foremost, kids are taken care of and getting what they need to. Yeah. But I think that there is some realistic compromise that could be done. And we must, in the end, agree that not having a childcare system is devastating.
Yeah,
it's 100%. Devastating Absolutely. For the economy and for families in this world, in yeah. addition to the business owners that own childcare businesses.
Right.
It's not just, this is not about bailing out an industry. This is about keeping an industry whole for the good of the entire state.
Right. Yeah. Right. And yeah. So how, where politically with all of this, this is kind of setting up. It's a roadmap to 2026.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to ask you to respond to this because I don't respond. But our political director.
What if I want to?
If you, hell, if you want to. I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole if I had Senator in front of my name. But our political director, Dan Schaefer, wrote an article famously where he said that Tony Evers should not seek.
Yeah. Not going to comment on that.
I wouldn't comment on that. And I love Governor Evers. I would love to have him on the show. I wouldn't ask him about this, but I would love to talk to him about what it's been like to try to do the best you can in the face of such headwinds from the Republican Party. And I think, you know, the midterms coming up, what an amazing, if I was Tony Evers and I spent the last 8 years getting my teeth kicked in, hell yeah, I'd want a shot at now I can leave a legacy of something that is the right thing to do. Man, that's a tough decision. But where do you think, the governor aside, what is this set up for the legislature?
Well, I'm just going to pass on that whole governor thing, as you can imagine.
Well, because I think we're both fans of Tony Evers.
I think, you know, and I've been in close proximity to him. I think that he has done a truly, truly honorable job
yes.
in a horrible situation.
Oh, my God.
And I will say, as I was knocking on doors during the campaign, I always knocked on moderate doors.
He's
I was
wildly
never on,
popular.
Wildly popular in the Democratic Party without question. But I will say that there were an awful lot of moderate Republicans that when we came down to a conversation between, you know, Evers and Michaels, we would have a great conversation. And I said, the one thing that I will tell you and you should believe is that he is an honorable man.
Yes.
There is not a selfish bone in his yes. body. And every time that I had that conversation, the moderate Republican would nod their head.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that what he has done is shown that, one, it is you can't be perfect in a situation when you're not in control.
Right.
And so, and I think that his base understands that.
Right.
I think that philosophy really has to kind of be used in a broader sense when it comes to the overall caucus, because we realistically are doing the very best we can in a bad situation.
Right.
Now, what could he do with the majority in the Senate Democrat? What could he do with the majority? I think that the entire world changes for the governor, or for whomever else it is, as long as they're blue, but for the people of Wisconsin yeah. and the Democratic Party, yeah. taking the advantage of those maps and finally getting at least one house, God bless us too, but one house having the majority changes the world. And now instead of salvaging or crash landing a budget without anybody, you know, losing it, now we actually have the opportunity to fly the plane.
So
we have the opportunity to land the plane, right. not crash landing safely.
Right. So as we're sitting down here with Senator Chris Desler-Alfheim, what does it take to get there? What message has to get out? Where on the Peggy Noonan yardstick do we have to be? Do we have to have people that are way on the extreme? Do we have to have people that are moderates? What gets that majority that is not a majority for a couple of years? What gets the majority that is lasting, that the people of Wisconsin can say, I do trust the Democratic Party. I yeah. do trust their people to do the right things.
I think that, again, on the doors, the number one thing I heard, and yes, education, and yes, childcare, mm-hmm. but really the number one thing I heard in the moderates of the world, which were red, blue leaning, kind
we're
of purple one
state,
side
like
or the
your
other,
shirt.
Every one of them said, why can't you just work together?
Right.
And what allows government work together is one balanced government, which means properly yeah. mapped yeah. out, right? So balanced government is yeah. good government, is productive government. But also having the leadership of the party not insist on all or nothing. So the rule of 17 in the Republican Senate caucus means they never bring anything to the floor unless they have 17 votes.
Yeah.
Because they never want to rely on a Democrat to vote. So we go up there and we give good speeches. We can do all these things. We can submit bills all day long. And it doesn't matter because see, they're not going to get a hearing. That's a leadership decision.
That's crap.
It's not going to get a hearing.
Oh my God, is that dumb?
Or it's never going to come to the floor because they don't have 17 votes.
Right.
So leadership, Diane Hesselbein, again, coming out of this caucus saying, hey, we're going to have a rule that says, you know, if we believe as eight, so eight is more than 50% of the caucus believe it's the right choice to move forward, then we will move forward. But if we don't have eight, we won't. A rule of eight is holding your caucus together with allowing voices and compromise to take place. That's leadership. That is leadership. And if you have the leadership of the Senate caucus, who, in my opinion, has just proven the fact that they are ready to lead this state, because we are proving the fact that we are, one, going to negotiate the best we can for people. We have people's minds in first, and we are willing to not stand on the edge and wait for perfection. And I respect the hell out of the people that are standing on the edge saying no.
Yeah.
We should just say no. I get it, because what you want is the full solution. Mm-hmm. That is not the world we live in.
Right.
So I expect them to continue standing there. I expect them to continue demanding more.
Yeah.
And then it is the pragmatic portion of each caucus that has to say, okay, I believe in what you're saying. If you want 10 steps, let's go 4 and prove that it works so that we can take steps 5 and 6 in the future. We have to be able to get back to that. If we stand on the grounds of far right and far left, and just stand there and yell at each other, we get nowhere.
Right.
That is not what the people of Wisconsin want, period.
No, and I think right now the entire, well, no, I shouldn't say the entire, I don't want to speak in entireties, but the majority of the Republican Party is in an extreme position. You look at the leaders.
Well, that's where they have decided to be right now.
Correct. Yes, right now.
I believe that all Republicans are that? No,
no.
I don't.
Look at people like Kitchens and all that.
Yeah, and I think that there were very good statesmen. There are very good rational Republicans. And, and God bless them. Both parties have to be there.
Yeah.
If we as a Democratic Party, we are absolutely people first. That is the bottom line. But there is a rational edge to that says we can't necessarily afford to do everything we want right now.
Right.
That is the value of the two-party system.
Right.
It's trying to keep, again, with proper maps, we can keep it in balance to say, you're right, that's a good idea. We can't quite give it all. We can't do it 100%, but we can move towards that.
Yeah.
That's what balanced government should be
doing. It would be interesting to see what Wisconsin is like with minority leader Robin Voss.
You know, the only good, Robin's been around a long time, but I will say he's the one that finally came to the table. He's the that had to help get it done. And I still feel bad. Again, maps matter.
That's so conflicting.
I know. I'm not giving him a pat on the back, but
because he was the architect of all this.
He absolutely, true. So we shouldn't be giving him any credit, but he's the one that was actually in the negotiating table. He was the one with all the words. Everything that Diane Hesselbein got included into this this budget, this not great budget, everything that is in there, the almost $1 billion in capital projects for UW, the bridges, the MSP payments, all of those things were negotiated by Diane with Robin.
That's crazy.
Robin is the one that had to do it. Senator Lemieux didn't have a whole lot of voice. It was his caucus that was having trouble. So he's the one that showed up, and Voss is the one that made it happen. And we talked on the way back from the break, there was an idea, this whole timeline with July 4th and the Trump budget. We can talk about that a little bit as well. But there was a sense of urgency to make sure that we collected the Medicaid cap increase. We had been at, I think, 1.5 and went up to 6%. And that was a big deal. And it wasn't just for the hospitals. Number one, keeping hospitals healthy does matter.
Yeah.
We had to kick back to make sure no hospital was kicked in the teeth because there were lots of winners and a couple of losers. So we had to make sure there were no losers. And then the state collected, they refer to it as the skim. The state received the rest of that to go directly towards our Medicaid budget. Missing out on that opportunity would have been massive in a negative way. So, again, the Robin Voss pushed to accept an increase in Medicaid funding for the hospitals. And why we wouldn't now go for Medicaid going to the full Medicaid program. How do you say yes to, how do you say yes to expanding Medicaid for the hospitals and not say yes to expanding it for people in general?
You say yes,
that
but.
Is, again, hypocrisy at its best.
Right? That's wild. I don't understand some of that stuff and how you can justify that.
No.
You know, it's, that doesn't make a ton of sense. But normally I have a Mark's Musings segment. I'm going to have you stick around because this is going to be good.
Oh, boy.
Yes. We're not going to talk politics. We're going to talk big picture stuff. Take it away, Senator Chris Desser, Elfheim.
I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. When she walked.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you're 55 or older and into that whole saving money thing, T-Mobile has an exclusive phone and internet bundle just for you. Right now, get two unlimited phone lines plus 5G home internet for just $30 each per month with autopay, plus taxes and fees. And with 5G home internet, setup is easy with just one cord and no technician needed, which is great if you're also into that whole keeping it simple thing. Switch now and experience the best mobile network in the U.S. Visit your local store to start saving. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Based on analysis by Ookla Speedtest Intelligence data, Q4 2024 to Q1 2025, Ookla trademarks used under license. Unlimited on our network. Customers on voice plan may notice speeds lower than other customers and further reduction if using more than 50 gigs a month due to data prioritization. Video streams and SD on this plan. Home internet pricing after $20 a monthly bill credit plus $5 per line without autopay. Debit or bank account required. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns, it's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. 5 years after the fake elector scheme to overturn the 2020 election, legal accountability is grinding along for some of the conspirators and those who wittingly or unwittingly supported them. But pardons may be in the wind, too. May 27th, a three-judge New York appellate court stripped Trump campaign attorney Kenneth Chesbrough, an alleged key organizer of the swing state fake elector scheme, of his license to practice law in New York. June 16th, the alleged mastermind of the fake elector scheme, John Eastman, was recommended for disbarment in California. He can still appeal the decision. Also June 16th, a civil jury found MyPillow CEO and election denier Mike Lindell liable for $2.3 million for defaming former Dominion Voting Systems executive Eric Coomer. Dominion itself has a claim pending against Lindell, right-leaning news outlets, and several other Trump-alleged conspirators and collaborators. The Michigan Advance reported July 5th that a hearing on whether the trial of 15 of 16 Michigan fake electors should go forward has been moved to September 9th. A trial in Arizona is scheduled for January 5th, 2026, for the alleged fake electors and Trump associates, including his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows. Mother Jones reported June 4th that President Donald Trump's pardon attorney was considering pardons for the accused fake electors. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Where today we are answering the question, who sings it better, Janis Joplin or Senator Chris Desser Elfheim? I think it could be debated.
I'm going to have a karaoke fundraiser, y'all.
Right on.
For X amount of dollars, you can get me to sing damn near anything.
All right. Very good. Very good. So lately, you know, it's been interesting. I've been more introspective than most times. My wife had her grandmother pass away, who she was very close with. My 8-year-old son, or he's now 8, you know, and you know, as I'm getting older, I'm seeing the passage of time. And it's like, it does. I tell my son every day, stop it. Stop growing. Stop getting so old. And I look at, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing, from work to politics and all of that. And I wanted to ask people who have an influence in my life and who I look up to, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And how what is your outlook as you have more years behind, you know?
Yeah.
And so why do you do all of this?
I think it's a good question, and I'll share an answer that applies to both my business career and politics. Uh-huh. When my daughter was about, I don't know, 7, she came home from school and had one of those handwritten Mother's Day cards. And it said, I love my mom because she gets me to meetings early, so we always get a good seat. I love my mom because she makes spaghetti. My mom goes to work every day and she has to fill in the line. And her answer was, helps people. Mm. In, you know, the 5 years that I'd been in the business that I chose, all she heard when I came home is, I helped this lady do that, or help that guy do that, or help this and this and this. So my entire career, my goal has been to try and solve problems, to make someone's situation better than when I found it. And that's been my philosophy in business for all this time. And now stepping into politics, it's the same thing. Mm. You know, when I said yes to this whole thing, whether it was city council, whether it was advocacy, whether it was the Senate position, I didn't say yes because I knew I was not up to date on every one of the issues that we are talking about today. I was complacent. I was comfortable. And I will acknowledge that forever. But the more I learned, the more I realized that what was needed in politics was a civilized voice who was capable of listening to all of the factors, who wanted to make it better, who wanted to solve things. I'm here. I am here in politics not because I was mad about one thing or another. It was because I knew that I had the skill set to be effective and to get all of the information of every issue, want to know the entire conversation, and then help people work through to find a solution. That's who I am as a business person. That's who I am as a politician, which I don't enjoy the word. But I am a problem solver and a communicator and a team builder. So in the world, in the dynamics of politics that we have today, we must have those that are standing on the edges and screaming for what they believe is right. I get that. I respect that. But we also have to have the statesmen and the stateswomen of our politics come in and say, I hear you. And I also hear the person that's on the polar opposite. And I have to find a little bit of empathy on both sides to say, okay, but we may disagree 89% of it. But I hear a little bit of reality in that story, and let's blend that into the solution. Hmm. That is why I'm here. I want to do good. I want to solve problems. And I think in this dynamic that we're in today, which is an unhealthy one, in my opinion, in politics, someone like me is trying to hold an even keel and work through things together.
Nice. When I look at, you know, I'm a dad and I've got 12, 8, and 4. I don't know what the future is like. You know, like right now, my 8-year-old, I'll say, and my 4-year-old, my 12-year-old doesn't do as much anymore, but they'll come and sit on my lap and they love to rock and all of that. And I had a moment yesterday where I was like, I love this, but my son is leaving these little kernels that, like, he's ready to not, you know, do that. And I'm terrified for that.
Oh, that's reality.
What happens?
They just get big. You know? I mean, I always say I've been raising teenagers for 30 plus years, 30 years, you know, Modern Family. And it's a growing, and again, you have to, instead of focusing on the fear of losing it, you have to focus on the joy of watching it and watch to see, you know, who they become and where they go. And as we've been impactful over the years, you start to see those lessons in how they live. Mm. And again, focus on the joy, not the fear.
Yeah.
Because what you have with them, you're never going to lose what you've had.
Yeah.
But think how much you have to look forward to and what's to come.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that time, but it's like, I don't know what the great unknown is.
You can't. You know, again, I am not a person that focuses on things that are out of my control. I take as much control as I can to guide, to steer, to be. And then the rest of it, we have to have faith that humanity will come around and do the right thing, which I think sometimes we are losing faith in. I know many are, but I'm not. I will be the eternal optimist that, with all of the information, most people are rational people that want to make a good choice with all of the information.
Yes.
And decisions are made often on limited information. And oftentimes those decisions and opinions are formed loudly on limited information. Yeah. So I have faith in a conversation that if someone is willing to hear the rest of the story, that they're willing to find that civilized answer and move forward. And I have faith the country will do that. The state of Wisconsin will do that. And I sure as hell hope the Fox Valley continues to do that.
Well, you know, I think that if we have people like yourself in the state Senate or in higher offices, God willing, drop that little nugget.
Settle down.
Never.
It's been 6 months.
I know. Well, yeah, whatever. You got the rational revolution. Thank you, Chris Elsler-Alfheim, for your time today and your friendship and all of that. It's so much appreciated. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Civic Media.
Don't forget to download the app.
Dang right. Download the app. Yes. Thanks. You can take the talk show host out of the woman. We'll see you next week on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. See ya.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Stacey Lynn. More countries have now been hit with increased tariffs, and they aren't happy about it.
President Trump announced a 30% tariff on imports from Mexico and the European Union. Mr. Trump accused Mexico of not doing enough to stop cartels in a letter to the nation's president. In a notice to the European Commission, Trump said the trade relationship with the EU zone was far from balanced, blasting trade deficits. The news follows dozens of letters the president sent to over 20 nations this week, warning of increased tariffs by August 1st. Willie James Inman, CBS News, Bridgewater, New Jersey.
A family member of a U.S. citizen killed in the West Bank is speaking out.
We are devastated that our beloved Saif Allah Musallat, nicknamed Saif, was brutally beaten to death in our family's land by illegal Israeli settlers.
The 20-year-old American from Florida was visiting his family when they say he was attacked.